Okay, our next case is Bell v. McDonough, docket number 22-1670. Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Your
Honor. Good morning, sir. You reserve 5 minutes of your time for rebuttal. Is that correct?
If the court please.
Yes.
I'm sorry?
Yes, please.
Okay. You have 5 minutes for rebuttal. You may begin when you're ready.
My name is Myers Morton. I represent the appellant. Let me alert the court that I'm hard of hearing. I have hearing loss, which means I have a hard time understanding words, and I also find myself speaking louder than I realize. And I'm sorry if it sounds like I'm yelling at you. It's because I'm unaware.
You can speak as loud as you want. In fact, that may be helpful.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Number one. And number two, if we ask you something and you don't quite understand it, feel free to tell us, okay?
Thank you, Your Honor.
I want to make sure you understand and you hear
thank
you well.
And if I may take this opportunity to say how professional and helpful your clerk's office is and very patient, I'd like to do so.
Well, thank you, Counselor. Some of the staff members are present here today, and I'm sure they'll be happy to hear that.
Good. If the court please, my Myers Morton, I represent the appellant. His name's Joseph A. Bell. He's a veteran. He's 95 years old, and he has had claims pending with the VA for more than 68 years. He is currently service-connected for a prostate problem, back disabilities, and right knee. What happened in the service is he had an injury that it crushed a testicle. It hurt his back. It hurt his knee. It was pretty bad, and this appeal has to do with an increased rating of his back disability. That's what all this is about. And we're trying to increase his back rating and pursuant to an extra scheduler rating under 38 CFR 3.
Well, Counselor, we read the background information on Mr. Bell, so we understand that, the background. The question I have for you is the case of Thun versus Shenensky. Can you explain how this impacts your case?
Tun says, first, it limits what the VA, not the board, it gives different roles for the board and the VA below on what their duties are under the statute. Under Tun, it gives the instruction to the VA to have initial screening.
But that's what we're arguing today. That's your case.
Correct. But the problem we're having is the VA below is taking on an action, doing something they're not entitled to do. What they're doing is they're, first of all, sort of like an oxymoron. They're saying this is an unusual situation where the schedules don't fit. This is extraordinary. And so they're sending it. They're making the determination it is extraordinary, and the second sentence they're saying it's not extraordinary. It's an oxymoron.
I'm confused. Are you saying that the mere decision to refer under this regulation suggests that the VA has already decided it's extraordinary, or that it's potentially extraordinary and has to be referred to the director, who's the only person that can award special compensation under the statute?
Yes, Your Honor. The director is the only one.
No, but I don't understand. The VA has to make a referral to the
To start right? with, yes.
But that referral doesn't actually make any determination as to whether
Correct.
It warrants or not.
Correct. It's their recommendation is the problem.
Why are they not allowed to recommend?
Because that's what the director is supposed to do, to make the decision.
Where in the regulation does it say the director can't rely on the expertise of the agency employees?
He can rely on whatever he decides. The director can rely on whatever information he has before him, that he makes the finding.
Didn't he make the finding here? We have a formal document from the director going through everything and saying, I don't find that this situation warrants TDIU.
And it was within 2 weeks of the recommendation they denied. I mean, it was, but yes, he made a recommendation. Yes, he made a decision to deny extra scheduler application of the extra scheduler.
Are you suggesting he didn't consider all the relevant facts?
He did, plus the recommendation that wasn't allowed to be given, that too.
You keep saying the recommendation wasn't allowed to be given, but what can you cite in either the regulation, statutes, case law to suggest that an agency deciding official can't rely on the recommendations of his subordinates?
Because what happened? It's the whole situation is backwards. We've got a situation under the regulation that says you cannot refer it to the director unless you decide there is something extraordinary about this disability that the tables don't apply. They have to make that first.
Something potentially extraordinary.
Right.
They're not the ones that can make that finding, though, right?
Right, but what they're doing in the same document...
I don't understand what you're saying. What they're saying is this potentially presents an extraordinary case for the director. They're not agreeing it's extraordinary. They can't do that under even your interpretation. It's the director that has to make that finding, isn't it?
The Tun, the way I understand Tun said, if I'm saying that right, Tun or Tun, is saying they have to make the initial determination that it is an extraordinary circumstance. And all I'm saying is, it's a simple argument. They're saying it's an extraordinary circumstance, then the next two sentences are saying it's not extraordinary. They're saying complete opposites in their referral to the director. And this situation, what comes out of it, shows how it's not working, how it's... arbitrary.
Where do you think this requirement that the agency has to make a finding that's an exceptional before it's referred?
Tun.
What regulation says that?
Well, the regulation, if I may, Your Honor. I'm going to try to get the regulation in front of me.
We can't create a requirement out of whole cloth. We must have been interpreting the regulation there. Where does the regulation say that the RO or the board or somebody must make an initial finding of an exceptionality before you can refer under 3.321?
It's the fact that there's a referral to somebody else to make a finding. Somebody's got to send it to the director.
But where does it suggest that before you can make that referral, you have to make the initial finding you said they made?
I understand that's from case law, including time.
I think let's assume Tun doesn't say what you think it says.
Okay, that probably doesn't then.
3.321, which is the regulation at issue here, 3.321B, just says to accord justice to the exceptional case, the director of compensation is authorized to approve on the basis of the criteria set forth and other things, an extra schedule or evaluation. It doesn't suggest that an initial determination of exceptionality has to be made, does it?
Apparently not in the express language of the regulation. You're correct, Your Honor.
And honestly, if the director is the one that has to make that determination, wouldn't it be actually improper for the agency to make that determination before it?
Absolutely. And that's what I'm suggesting. By making a recommendation, they're suggesting an outcome.
But it's just a recommendation that they're making.
Yes, they're calling it that.
How would it get referred if they didn't make a recommendation, if they didn't send it to the director?
Well, I don't understand why they need to make a recommendation when they're sending it to the director to make that decision.
Do you know how many of these cases the director of compensation probably gets every year? This person, in addition to all their other jobs, this is the way the government works. High-level officials that make decisions get staffed. They get memos with recommendations. The Solicitor General personally authorizes every appeal the United States takes to an appellate court. Do you think that the Solicitor General actually looks through the briefs and the record and figures out in every one of those cases whether appeal is warranted on his or her own determination? No. He gets a memo, or she gets a memo that says, I recommend this. Isn't that exactly what's happening here?
Isn't that what? I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Isn't that exactly what's happening here? Is the director is getting a memo saying, here are the facts of the case, here's what the regulations are, here is our evaluation, and we would recommend you do this. The director is free to ignore that, right?
Yeah, well, in this case, the director gave the wrong opinion. She gave an advisory opinion, which is a different standard altogether. My point is, this is dysfunctional, what has come out of this, what came out of this. We've got...
But you're not challenging the merits of this determination, right? You're challenging the Commissioner's
The law, yes, sir.
But I don't understand what in the regulation prohibits the director from being staffed on this issue.
The VA, the administrator, the bureaucracy's interpretation of the regulation from their manual says they can make this recommendation. That is wrong. They should not be.
What regulation is it inconsistent? What statute or regulation is that inconsistent with?
That I'm complaining about is 38 CFR 3.321 on the extra scheduler evaluation. That's my whole case.
I understand that, but what in that regulation is inconsistent with the VA making a recommendation? Where does it say only the director can do the fact-finding and the evaluation of everything?
It says director's findings. I mean, it's the director makes the findings, and I've cited some cases in my brief that I understand mean when it says, I'm paraphrasing, when it says director's findings, he's the one that considers the evidence. He's the one that makes the decision.
He did.
He should not have gotten a recommendation, and the problem with getting the recommendation, the whole process, the VA rewrote the regulation itself and its correspondence and its decision. It rewrote it, took words out. It's completely arbitrary. We've got a case where the board, in this case, is telling them. The board tells the VA, send it to the director. The board didn't say, send it to the director and you make a recommendation. They did it on their own. In this case, we've got the board repeatedly remanding it back to the VA saying, do this. Get a vocational expert.
But they did exactly what...
They didn't. They were.
The board sent it to the VA and the VA sent it on to the director.
I know, but they made an added recommendation. What I'm saying, there's a track.
Where did the board say you can't send a recommendation?
They didn't say you can't. But I'm just saying this is a case where the board would send it to the VA to get a vocational expert opinion. And the VA expressly said, no, we're not going to.
Well, that's not what we're deciding.
You're into your rebuttal time, but Judge Stark has a question.
Just real quick. In your briefing, you had argued at a certain point that 38 U.S.C. Section 1155 does not actually enable extra scheduler awards. Have you abandoned that argument, or are you still?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Sure. The statute, Section 1155, you had argued in your opening brief.
Yes.
That it doesn't even allow the agency to have extra scheduler awards. You didn't address that in the reply. I assume you've dropped that argument.
I don't want to drop anything, Your Honor. My point being, extra scheduler, that's 11 instead of, they only get 10.
Right. But
that's 11.
Right, but your client is arguing for the 11th. So I didn't understand why
The 11th is not working.
I see. So you are contending it's illegal to have an 11th?
Yeah, I think the VA, this federal agency is run amok, and their interpretation of their rules shouldn't be listened to anymore, if the court please.
Mr. Hunter.
Yes, sir. May it please the court. The scope of Mr. Bell's appeal is extremely narrow. Mr. Bell is not challenged that the director had discretion to deny his claim for extra scheduler rating. He's not challenging in this appeal the substance of that denial either. Mr. Bell is only challenging that the regional office could not provide a recommendation upon forwarding the case for her consideration. That argument flies in the face of TUN. TUN says that the regional office, the RO, is the body of initial review for extra scheduler rating claims and can prevent them from going to the director full stop. That decision will be reviewable by the board, but no referral is required. It can be stopped there. That's the holding in TUN. So to exercise a lesser included power.
So in TUN, we found that the regulation is silent on this matter. And we endorsed the VA's practice of providing the recommendation to the director, since the director still has full authority and power. But what we're talking about here is a practice, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
What's being challenged is just the procedural step.
So the counselor says it's not in the law, and he could be referred to as a practice. Now, explain to me why that's not correct.
I guess I'm not following the question.
Well, explain to me if it's a practice. Respond to counsel's arguments on what I just expressed to you and what we agree on. And what we're talking about here, it's not per se a regulation. In tone, we found the practice to be adopted by silence. But so do you?
Yes, sir. So okay. Under 3.321B, the director is given the discretion. That's the regulatory authority given. But the regulation is silent. It doesn't prejudge. It doesn't explain. It doesn't limit or prescribe how the director is meant to make those findings, how the director is meant to exercise that discretion. Those matters are left to the director's discretion. And so the practice of the VA is to do what Judge Hughes was saying, is to practice just like everywhere else in the administrative state. You prepare a memo, you provide the facts, you provide the law, you provide a recommendation, and then it goes before the decision maker. And then the decision maker, anyone who's been in this process knows, the decision maker will review it and then send back notes or edits or perhaps questions or raise issues. And then make their final decision, which is capable of just overruling the recommendation. It happens all the time.
There is occasion when an existing administrative practice is overruled, or perhaps the court finds it to be illegal, correct?
Yes, sir.
Is this one of those instances?
No. In fact, in Tun, the court recognized the regional office's power both to withhold from the director if it deemed it not appropriate and to provide a recommendation. I will say,
there would have to be something in the statute or regulation that's inconsistent with this practice for us to find it invalid, right?
Yes, I believe that's correct, Aaron, and I believe
there's
that's
nothing
what
in the
says.
Regulation or the statute that even speaks to whether the VA can staff it like this.
No, there isn't, and now, in fact, that's the holding.
The regulation does, at a certain point, require the director to actually make the factual findings and exercise discretion, right?
The director does, yes, 3.321 does pass that decision to the director.
So we might get to a point where if the director didn't actually properly, go through and say, I make these findings, I exercise my direction, but defer to the recommendation, that might not be appropriate.
That does not seem appropriate. That's right. Yes,
so
the director has to exercise his own discretion.
For all the reasons stated by the VA, I hereby find so. The director's got to state a rationale or findings, some type of findings, to support its discretion.
I think the director probably could adopt the recommendation, but would have to explain that adoption of the recommendation. And that's what happens here. If you read the director's decision, there's synthesis of the materials. There's a big list of flexion of the torso is what's mostly reported in terms of lumbar spine disability. The facts and law that were provided to the director, and the director summarizes all that. None of this is greater than 30%. We don't have a lot of hospital visits. I'm not finding what I would normally need to find to rule an extra schedule rating appropriate.
There's a forfeiture argument as well. Could you just help me on that one? Because it seems as if the argument we're hearing today was not as well developed in front of the Veterans Court, but it was addressed by the Veterans Court. So can we really say that it was forfeited and we lacked jurisdiction?
Well, let me clarify the forfeiture argument first. I'm not arguing that the court does not have jurisdiction to entertain. Forfeiture, as I understand, is a discretionary doctrine, and if this court wishes to consider the argument, it has the discretion to do so. The argument that you find presented to the Veterans Court was simply the director should not have considered the recommendation, they shouldn't have provided a recommendation. No regulation was cited, no language was cited, no statute was cited, no argument about statute or regulation was provided. And the reason we argue the court shouldn't exercise its discretion and hold the argument forfeited is because not only that's what the Veterans Court said, but also because this court, the arguments that you can review, that you have jurisdiction to review from the Veterans Court are statutory and regulatory arguments. If you take jurisdiction over arguments like this that haven't been presented to the Veterans Court, you're setting yourself up to be the court of first review.
You're not arguing that counsel forfeited this argument.
No, we are arguing that counsel forfeited this argument, or that Mr. Bell forfeited this argument at the Veterans Court. This court has discretion to entertain that, and if it wishes to take jurisdiction over it, it has the power to do so.
Have we set out criteria in veterans cases for how to measure how developed an argument was made to the Veterans Court?
If so, I don't have that standard.
Do you have anything to say on the Section 1155 and whether extra schedule or benefits are even lawful?
Nothing more than what's in our brief. I don't think that's a reasonable interpretation of the statute as we set forth. It's certainly not a pro-veteran construction. It would fly in the face of long-standing practice. Some of the documentation we set in our brief goes back 100 years, back to 1930, when regulations were promulgated regarding extra scheduler ratings. This is a very well-established practice. If it has never been authorized that entire time, it would be quite a surprise, I think, to the Veterans Bar, to the VA itself, to 100 years of legislators. I have plenty more, but it doesn't seem particularly like anything.
If the court please, on the...
You're going to have a little less than 3 minutes. You have a little less than 3 minutes.
I addressed my inability to develop the argument very well below. I think that the case law, I brought enough of the issue up, I believe, which is the arbitrariness and the inconsistency of what happened here and the outcome. And I guess my last point is, when the board, after the director made his opinion, the board denied the claim for extra scheduler consideration that we appealed, and the basis of their decision, the main basis of the decision, is the director's opinions are highly probative. They influenced him and then said, well, he made that decision, and it's just the regulation calls for justice. And we question whether this 95-year-old veteran who's had claims pending for almost 7 decades is getting justice. And these circumstances don't appear to be, if the court please. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The court now takes this case under advisement. We thank the parties for their arguments.